Right. Hello, everybody. We're back. Spiritual Graffiti Podcast.
Hello.
What's up, Ruby? It's me, Ruby, and we have a special guest, Jonathan Wheeler, or I refer to him as the Death Guy. We'll just start off with Jonathan. Can you give us like your origin story, basic life story, or wherever you want to start off is cool. Spot. Ready?
Yeah, just a whole life story in a couple minutes. Great.
when were you conceived, Jonathan?
Well, St. Louis, Missouri. He called me the Death Guy. I'm a hospice nurse by profession right now. I decided to become a hospice nurse because of my spiritual practice, essentially. I was raised religious and, I've had a chronic disease since I was 8 years old. So I've like dying is like a real possibility for me. There has been like most of my life in a way that a lot of people, don't have to think about like, oh, you could die in a couple of days if you don't take your medicine kind of a situation. Always been like, it's just been there. So I've been comfortable with it. It's been like a possibility. So, but like the religion didn't really offer me any kind of like way to deal with the emotions around it or how to because it was just like, well, it'll be great because Jesus will resurrect you and you'll have a perfect body and then you'll go to heaven and it'll be great, wonderful. It's like, yeah, well, I have to live here now with this thing, so it's broken. What do I do with that? And they're like, don't worry about it, Jesus will take care of it later. I'm like, that's not good enough for me.
Why not?
Why wasn't it good enough for me?
I'm just curious, like, why didn't it feel like it resonated with you?
Well, for one thing, the doctrine was your body that you have now, you're gonna get it back again, but perfect. He's gonna remake it because of the resurrection or whatever. I was like, why would I want the same one? Like, I lived with it my whole life and it was a pain in my ass. So why would I be like, oh, well, it's better now. So, but it never, they never dealt with the grief of it or the anger or any of the real things that come with like living with a chronic disease and like having to actually face dying. It was just kind of like, push it away. You can only feel good about it because Jesus. And, So I found other spiritual things like Zen and karma yoga, Advaita, and kind of went on that path, the path to enlightenment, classically. And that led me to this, from Dr. Hawkins, David R. Hawkins from Power Versus Force. He had this, he's like, here's how you get past your fear of death. Here, you can go with your, in meditation, and you can be the one that like greets people as they come over as they're dying, and you'll appear to them how you need to appear to comfort them. And you can be the one that greets them. And so it like, you're offering them the solace and like you transcend the fear as you help them transcend the fear. And it like struck me so hard. It was like, that's such a cool like meditation. I loved that. And then I was like, well, I could do that in real life too. I'm like, there's a hospice here. I could like volunteer and like sit with people and, whatever. And I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, I'll chant mantras with, in my mind while they're doing their, while they're dying. And, so I started doing that years ago and did that kind of off and on, and was running my own business and I hated it and needed to switch and do something different with my life. And it was like, oh, I want to, you know, I'm like really good with people. I want to like be out like working directly with people. And then I want to do something compassionate and like actually of service to the world and up to the people I'm with. And so it was like nursing was like quick, you know, just a few years of school. Like I could go to a tech school. It was cheap. And I could be a hospice nurse in 3 years. So, went and did that.
Right. Wow.
Started. And once I started working in hospice, you know, and I was doing my same thing, is like I was doing nurse things of, you know, getting medication orders and, you know, assessing and all of those things. But I was also like trying to like bring that spirituality and like trying to do as much energy work as I knew how to do and like to help them have a peaceful transition. But there was like something missing from what I was doing. I was like, I don't know what else to do here. There's got to be some other thing. And then it got, I got introduced to like ritual magic during that time. And like, you know, was hanging out with all these witches and all these things. And so it led me to this other path. It was like, oh, through that got to like actually some like, you know, connecting to like really old practices of like what happens, you know, like the old death mysteries from, you know, Egypt and Greece and Rome, that like what they would like show people what to do after you died. And like, so like learning that, led me to kind of like, okay, now I have this like spiritual practice, you know, every week, like going in vision work to, like walk people through the process of what happens after they die. So that they're prepared and they actually know, they're not just like stuck and going like, well, I'm scared because I don't know what's going to happen. Or they're just sitting there going, I'm going to go to heaven right after I die, which isn't what happens. There's a whole threshold you have to get through before you get to heaven, if that's what you're going to do. So that's a brief synopsis of how I got here. How me and Pete met at the Hot Alien Summer Camp. And I taught a class, and I walked everybody through the death vision, showed them the process, and we connected.
Nice.
Connected after that. So,
yeah. Well, I guess that's my first main question is, I don't know if you can describe the death process for us, or how do you walk people through that journey? Maybe you can sort of walk us through it now.
Sure. Like after, like the spiritual process, or do you want the whole physical process? Because I can do both. I'm just kidding. Do you want to know what happens to your body every step of the way? Because we can do that too.
Yeah, I'm not trying to die today. Okay. No, that's,
I think,
funny.
You're,
I mean, kind, I, yes, kind of it. Both though. Yeah.
just from here, my nurse assessment, you're gonna make it. I think you're gonna make it through the day. I have confidence.
Yeah. Awesome.
No one's
Sounds
dying
good.
Today.
Hear that, people?
Yeah.
by the time this comes out, though, you never know.
yeah, a couple people. The vision process is like, they go first into a desert. It's a big, flat, hot, lifeless desert, and like walking and walking, and in the distance there's a river, and it's the river of death. And a lot of people get to the river and they sit and they're lost, they contemplate their life, they, you know, some people sit there confused because they were expecting something completely different, and then they're like, they're here and they don't know where to go, because they've been walking through the hot desert. They go to the river, and a lot of people drink from the river, and that makes them forget everything in their life, which is good and bad. Good, like you want to kind of forget a little bit so you can let go and you can move on to whatever the next thing is, but right. You don't want to forget all the things you learned in your life, which is what, if you just like guzzle the river, a lot of people get to that point, and then they just like, they'll see, they just want to live again. And so they'll feel drawn to like a new life being born, and they'll just like hop into a new lifetime and be reincarnated. But the higher octave, like the more deeper process, is if you proceed on, there's a bridge that crosses the river, and this is an angelic being. This is the scales, you know, in Egypt it was Ma'at, you know, the scale, and they'd weigh your heart against the feather, you know, like how heavy was your heart, how in balance were you. Mm-hmm. And that process, like, you know, it's like the life review. You go through, you know, what your life was like, how balanced were you. You cross the bridge after that process, and there's a vast plains towards a mountain. And in the plains, you know, it's like there are beings there that will like chop at your body, like cut off limbs, cut off, you know, skin, and then your body will like fall away, or like what you thought your image of your body will fall away from you. And then the mountain, once you get to the mountain, you start climbing, and then you're confronted with all the voices that you heard in your life. Your parents and your school and your religion and the government and the society and, all those things are like bombarding you, and you have to like confront and like kind of recognize what was you, what wasn't you, and like surrender all that as you go. And the top of the mountain is like a kind of resting place, and there's angelic beings that are there that kind of watch over people. They might rest for a long time, they might rest for a short time, and then from there is like the jumping off point from, you know, to reincarnate to another lifetime, to kind of like feel into where, you know, what's the next step for you. Or you can go into the like spiritual realms and work there, or there are heavens beyond that, and there's all sorts of different pathways that you can take. You know, most people probably just reincarnate, unfortunately. Sorry, Christians, but you know, heaven's up there somewhere, but I haven't explored that. I just get people to the bus station. I don't care what they do after that.
yeah. No, I see. I mean, how do you think people know kind of what they're supposed to do next? Like, you know, once they get to the mountain and like the resting place, I mean, you said most people reincarnate. I'm assuming that's because they have more like lessons to learn in this realm, I suppose. But if that's not the case, like, how would you know? Would it be based on like sort of all the, you know, getting confronted with the things from your life? It seems like you kind of do a lot of like shadow work.
You cut out there for a second.
Going through this like desert and across the river. But yeah, like how would you know what the next thing is if you had to guess?
From the stuff I've read, it's sort of instinctual for a lot of people. It's just like they're drawn to the next thing. If you know, people that are going into it, like after a lifetime of deep spiritual work, like probably have an idea of what they want to do, like maybe more so than someone who maybe wasn't paying any attention during their life and then is like, oh, whoops, I should have maybe paid attention. And then they're just drawn to what the next thing will be. So, but it is choice. Apparently we like, you know, coming back to Earth because we keep doing it. So
yeah, there must be some reason. I guess also it's like the devil, you know, or whatever, like people probably, I don't know, instinctually want to come back because it's, I don't know, it's like, it's a little less scary than the unknown of whatever else may be out there. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much grief you experience about your life after you die, but I imagine that's part of the process too. Like you might feel compelled to come back because you miss it, and, or, you know, not even that you necessarily liked it, but just that it would be scary to like walk away from that. Seem like losing something.
Do you think our religious programming influences us even though we're in the spiritual realm? Like, you know, if you're looking at any of, like, you look at the seven deadly sins or like guilt, shame, whatever, you know, though, in a sense, those things aren't real, you know, because it's like you're programmed to believe something is a certain way. So then if you're, you know, you're like in the afterlife and your heart is being weighed against a feather, it's like, I don't know, is the shame real or is the guilt real? So like, is this a system that's like kind of created to make us feel a certain way? So then when we are in the afterlife, we think we're owed to do something. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think a lot of it is like self-imposed, because like we've been doing these like group visions and taking people through, and people have all kinds of interesting experiences, like going with the intention of like finding someone that's ready to be helped. And a lot of the people that are like just staying in one spot are just doing that to themselves. It's like, I wasn't good enough to go on. I was bad in my life. I was bad to my family. I was mean to them or whatever. And it's not really like, it's not morality in this, in the way that we think of here. It's like balance is the thing, but you can balance it after too. It's not like you're stuck because of all of your choices. It's like, but their own mindset is what keeps them there, which has been pretty interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, like, all right, so like, if in my experiences I've had, or like oneness experiences, I always get the message that kind of like our life on Earth is really about experience, you know, like kind of expanding your awareness or your perspective. So if you're like looking at our reality from like a non-dualistic view, right? If you're good in this life, you're bad in the next life. In the end, really, it's about expanding your awareness or your perspective. So like certain things, like sins, aren't necessarily real from that viewpoint. So like, why do we feel that way when we've transitioned?
My thought is that like this place, this like transition land, it's like a threshold, and it's still so close to Earth life, and like it's about separating us from that consciousness and getting back closer to that non-dual, you know, like back closer to oneness, but like you're still like in it when you get there. And so it's all these steps to like ease you away from sitting there going like, ah, oh, well, I really fucked it up. And, you know, because there's not like a God sitting there going, you know, look how bad you did. It's just like,
yeah,
this is what your life was. And did you do what you wanted to do? You know, was it balanced according to your, you know, what you wanted to do? You know, I don't know. But it feels like it's not, you know, I agree with you. Like, ultimately, yeah, it's like, it's just the universe experiencing itself, like separating so it can go, what's it like to be a tall, bald white man? You know, what's it like to be a, you know, a little short woman? You know, like, what's it like to live in this place or that place or do this or that? And none of it's like better or worse than another thing, or right or wrong in the way we think about it. So yeah, I mean I don't
necessarily, to be honest, I don't really know what I really think. I mean, I just like to think about these things, you know. I don't know if what's right or wrong, because it's like, even things we're taught, like angels, like, you know, we're kind of always taught to believe that they're good, but I think they're much more neutral than people are aware of. I think it's kind of like they're almost like, you know, like kind of monitoring or watching us and kind of maybe steering the ship a little bit. But I think like they're a lot more hands off than you think, or than people think, in my experience.
Like, they're observers.
Yeah, like, I think they're, like, what people would call, like, the watchers, you know? Like, I think they may intervene at some times, or I think if you ask them for help, they'll help you. But I think, overall, I think they're much more, like, neutral, and to me, they feel a lot more, like, mechanical. What's your opinion?
Yeah, I agree with that. And, the closer to humanity they are, like, they might interact more, but then there's some that are just like, it's like an electrical grid or something. It's like stepping down, you know, like it's like a power transformer or something. It's like taking the infinite power of God and like taking it down a level so it can interact in a different way. And it's like, they don't even understand what we are, like an angelic being like that. It's not even, it absolutely doesn't think like us. It doesn't, like, you know, it's not like looking lovingly at us. It's just like, you know, I'm just doing this function here in the universe and that's it. But like, I don't know, everybody talks about Archangel Michael, like, apparently loves to like do shit for people, and I haven't had that experience with him, but lots of people are like, oh yeah, you ask him, he'll do whatever. And like, there are those types of angels, but then a lot of them are just like doing their thing. Yeah, it's like a computer more than a person that we think of that would be like lovey-dovey with us.
Yeah, sure. I do think as humans, we like to kind of like project humanity onto, like, I don't know, spiritual things in general. Like, I mean, just the same way we kind of personify like nature, or, you know, give, you know, project our feelings onto our pets. Like, you know, I mean, I do think animals and plants have feelings in a sense, but definitely not in the same way that we do.
Right,
like, obviously, like, they can sense things and react, and they experience, like, I'm sure, you know, like, dogs experience loneliness or whatever, but it's not like, I don't think that they can put an interpretation or like a judgment on it the same way that we can. And I guess that's probably how angels are too. It's like, they're just like, they have sort of a job in the universe, and they do the job, and they're not really like interpreting or putting morality into what they're doing or what we're doing, you know? Like, I think the idea of them being observers is sounds really accurate to me, at least. And yeah, I'm sure, like, I think you can call on, you know, angels or spirits or guides or whatever, for help. But I think, like, you know, maybe the reason that they don't come to your aid when you ask is because it's like not the it's like not the right time, or that's not the thing that's meant for you. Like that sort of thing, but it's not based on like any kind of like moral judgment, or, you know, like, oh, you don't deserve this, or, you know,
yeah,
you've been a bad, bad girl. Yeah. That sort of thing.
When I started, I was never like, you know, I was raised religious. So it was like, you feel it through the Holy Ghost, but you're praying to God, and we didn't pray to saints or anything like that. And then, like, you know, Zen and enlightenment, it's like, you're not getting in touch with any other beings. It was always just like, no, you go to the self with a capital S and that's it. There's no thing. But then it was like, oh, I want to interface more with the world. And there are these other, you know, intelligences around, like, and they, you know, they can communicate or whatever. So I started like getting in touch with my, you know, guides or whatever. And nearly all of the time when I would be like, what do I do? What do I do? It was like, the feeling was like a shrug and like, I don't know, just pick something.
Word.
Yeah. Just pick. It doesn't matter. Just what do you want to do? Just there's options here. Like, just play the game. That's all. Just make a decision. Play the game.
Yeah. There's no right or wrong thing to do here. Like, I think those are big questions. I think maybe, like, you know, like, what am I supposed to do next? Like, that's just never a question that gets answered for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there's not,
like, they can't make that decision for me. You know, I have free will or whatever, I guess. But it's like littler things, I think, you know, where I think like my prayers, quote unquote, get answered. I don't know. But yeah, I think anytime I've asked, like, for some kind of existential guidance, like, that's a lot harder, because that's just, that shit's on you, man. Like, you know what I mean?
I was just going to say, like Pete said earlier, it's like, it's more about having the experience of being here. And so it's like, if you go that way, you're going to have that experience. If you go over this way, you're going to have this experience. Like, it's not like there's one right thing for your path. Like, that one might, your car might catch on fire, and over here it might not, but like, you're going to experience something either way, and like, you're going to get something out of it.
Of course. Yeah. I just think, yeah, I think maybe it is the fact that we think and perceive in terms of duality, but I mean, I definitely have gotten tripped up on, like, I can be very indecisive. And I think a lot of it is because I feel like I'm afraid that I'll make one wrong choice and it'll like ruin everything. Yeah, you know? Like, right. I'm afraid I'll be like, I'll make a mistake that's so big. Like, if I had just not done this, then like everything would have been fine, you know? But that's just not how it ever works. Like, nothing I've ever decided to do or decided not to do has like destroyed my life entirely, you know? Like, that's not probably gonna happen. But I think like it's kind of easy to get tripped up when it's sort of big life decisions, like quitting a job or moving, you know, like moving to a different country or something. Like, you may want to do these things, but you're afraid like that one choice is going to be the thing that ruins your life, or you know, like, you failed the test, you know, something like that. Like, you failed and now your life is going to suck because of it. But you're right. It is just about experience. And even the experiences of like pain or suffering can be kind of incredible and beautiful in the long run. You know, while you're going through it, it's not usually like, you don't have the foresight to be like, oh, I'm gonna really learn something from this horrible experience. But down the road, I don't know. I mean, I think I look back on on the hard things that I've been through, and I've been through some things, I guess. And I, like, now I wouldn't change them. At the time, I was like, I would have done anything to escape it. But
right,
yeah, now I definitely, like, feel like it was all part of my, like, path, I guess.
I don't want to go too deep into this, I guess, but what do you think of, like, the Gnostic worldview of, like, we're stuck here and, like, the Archons are, like, trapping us in here?
I don't particularly, like, vibe with that. I think there are probably layers of other, you know, well, okay, I'll come at it from this angle. So I was raised in the Mormon church and it came to me later because they talk about Heavenly Father. That's who they worship. Like, this is God, it's Heavenly Father. And I felt like my prayers were just going to nowhere. Like, there were not, like, answers to prayers. And it was like, it came to me that it was like, oh, I think that's some kind of, like, it is some higher order being, but it's like basically a parasite that's, like, running this whole religion to, like, harvest the souls and harvest the energy that everyone puts into it, and, like, and is just feeding off it. So I think there are those things going on, like the Archons, you know, like manipulating people for their own ends and things, but I don't think it's like an absolute, like, for everyone on Earth, like, oh no, everyone's stuck here and we have to,
it's not like the ultimate truth.
Yeah.
I think
Yeah, I don't think it's like, oh, they have control over everything that's happening in this realm. But it's like, there probably are, you know, big swaths of thing that like unconscious people that aren't aware. And then it's just like, we can just manipulate them and harvest their energy and for whatever their purpose is. I think that's happening for sure, but...
I think more and more, like, I think it's really about what you feed, you know. It's like your beliefs is what kind of obviously shifts your reality. So if you're, I always thought, like, the Gnostic thing was kind of like a psyop, like, kind of redirecting people's energies to think like they don't have a way out, you know. And you know, like, if you feed that belief system, obviously the energy goes there. But if you know that you have, like, your own free will and your own power, then you know, you could be in control, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
You talked about being Mormon, but I know that you told me you became, like, a devotee of Shiva. Like, how did you wind up in that path?
Well, I got this book by Dr. Hawkins called Truth Versus Falsehood. And he has his, like, scale of the levels of consciousness. And he was, like, calibrating things with kinesiology. And he just, like, assigned it a scale. And it was, like, one is a bacteria. And, you know, 200 is the level of truth. 500 is love. 1,000 is, like, as high as you can go in a human body. And so he was just, like, rating, like, everything that you could imagine, like, all the religions and political parties and, like, books and movies and all these things, this huge book. So I was just going through that and, like, okay, well, like, let's look at mantras. Let's look at, like, these things. What's the highest, you know, level thing? And I'll start doing that. And it was like, okay, you know, you do, like, Om Namah Shivaya is like 700 or 800 or something. I was like, all right, word. I'm going to just start doing that. So I found this like song of Om Namah Shivaya. It's like an hour long. Just this very, like, beautiful, blissful thing. And I just like listened to it around the clock for like weeks and had the like the most wonderful experience. It just like clicked and like everything was happening spontaneously. I like wasn't doing anything to like control my body. It was just like moving around and like everybody, it was just like seeing the spontaneity and the like perfection of them doing what they're doing. You know, it was like a mom like yelling at her kid in Hobby Lobby. And I was like, she's perfect. That's all she can do. And just loving her. And like, it was just like the beauty was just like shown forth. It was just like this like intense love for all of life. And I was like, all right, Lord Shiva, here we are. And so then it was just like, that was my mantra. I was just like, I would do Om Namah Shivaya like all the time to myself. And eventually I was in Wisconsin for years and went to the Hindu temple there for a couple of years, doing the devotions and all of that. But it just got me where I needed to go, or where I wanted to go. But then too, it made the most sense for like what I was doing and kind of like where I was oriented. Cause it's like Shiva's the formlessness. Shiva is, you know, it, like form arises out of, you know, the infinite non-form and then returns to non-form. So they say like, oh, Shiva, the destroyer, but it's like, well, yeah, but not really, you know, it's just like, goes into form and out of form, and then you're back in Lord Shiva. So that was like the origin. It just always made sense, and then that led me to also like the goddess Kali as well. You know, like the feminine aspect, like the fierce feminine destroyer aspect, and that's been. Really interesting, especially like working in death and dying, because I like see her like in the forest and in the, you know, it's like the dead trees that are on the ground, but everything's growing out of them, you know, like the new life growing out of the holy rot in the forest floor, and it's like she's everywhere, you know, destroying, but then it's like creating. It's like creation from the destruction. That's how I got there.
That's cool. I mean, yeah, I just find it interesting, like when, like for me personally, like I always felt connected to like the Hindu pantheon, and I was like raised Catholic, and like I started. No, like I started having like meditations where like Ganesh would show up, and I didn't even know who he was at the time. So I just find it interesting when people have like offhand connections with specific deities, and like you get pulled into them, you know?
Yeah, it was
Kali, Kali too, you know? Kali was definitely one for me too.
Yeah, it was just like, it just, that was what stood out and called to me, and I just followed it, and, you know, and the other ones like didn't resonate as much. Yeah, it's quite a leap. Yeah. From Joseph Smith to Shiva and Rama and Kali.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, do you feel them when you do the death work, or no? I'm just curious, because like Shiva is like considered like you know, like a ferryman or a psychopomp in like shamanic work. You know, like he's somebody who helps with the dead.
I had an experience, I've done the magic course that I'm doing is called Quaria from Josephine McCarthy. Very hard to spell, but look up Josephine McCarthy, you'll find Quaria. Anyway, she has this one lesson about like the death process, and she describes this one angelic being that comes, and like she described it as like taking the like orb in the center of the person and like disconnecting it from them, and like, and that was the moment they died, was like taking this life force out of the body and then taking it away. And I was with this person, like he had been struggling like for days, like this horrible terminal agitation, and I was on call and I had been like talking to them for a few hours, like, okay, well, let's give him this much morphine and see if he can calm down. I'll call you in an hour. Called him in an hour, like, oh, he's calmed down a little, but I don't know. The pastor was here. He's a little better. I don't know. Okay, well, we'll give him a little more and then I'll call back in an hour. Called back in an hour, like, he's still not, he like won't relax. I don't know. We want you to come. So I come in. I walk in the door and they're like, his breathing just changed. And I walked in and I'm like, okay, it's happening like right now. And so we sat, the family's around, it's beautiful, holding his hand and just watching him take his last breath. And so I'm like calling in, you know, I'm opening the four directions. I'm calling in everybody. I'm doing mantras. I'm doing the whole thing. And there it was that I felt Lord Shiva come in as that being that would take that out. And I thought of it's called Mahamrityunjaya, the Death Conqueror mantra. And it talks about, he's the one that will pluck us from our ignorance, like plucking a fruit from a vine. And I was like, oh, there it is. Yeah. He's the one that will take you over, like literally pluck you from your life force and take you into the next realm. So that was like a pretty like clear, powerful thing, but definitely like always around. And I always call to him. I always do the Triambakam mantra, and to be around when people are dying. So
that's awesome. I mean, that's powerful stuff, like to have that support and, you know, protection. It, I mean, I don't know, like, I think, do you think like you are hyper aware of death, the energy of death in general?
I think so. I definitely can like feel it in my body sort of when like kind of waves of it are happening. It's not always, I don't always like have time to sit and like do a meditation to go, okay, what's happening with this feeling? But there's those times where it's like you feel dread for no reason, or you know, it's like anxiety for no reason, and then it's like, oh, these four people are now, you know, that I work with are now actively dying, and it, or like things like that happen sometimes. But
do you think it's like their anxiety and fear that you sense, like as they're dying, like you can sort of pick up on, especially if there's like several people going through the same experience, like do you feel like you're picking up on like their fear, or is that just sort of the energy that death feels like sort of kind of dread and anxiety?
It could be theirs. Again, I don't like interpret it very like granularly. It's just sort of like it comes in and I process it through my body and move it out.
Yeah.
More okay. So I know a lot of people that like they'll get the sense of like, well, this is where it's coming from or whatever. And I don't tend to have it. It's just like, there it is. I breathe it out. I send it off.
That's probably good. Like that I think once you start like thinking or analyzing because I tend to do that. And I definitely do pick up on people's like specific energies. And like that can be very like, as you can imagine when you're like open and receiving a lot of other people's shit, that can be overwhelming and annoying. And honestly, like not, you know, you have to kind of, yeah, you have to learn to either like block it or channel it somehow. And it sounds like you just kind of inherently know to whatever, it doesn't matter what it is, but it's something that, yeah, like something about you is able to transmute that energy or hold space for it, whatever it is. But yeah, I think it's probably best that you don't like feel the need to interpret it too much or internalize it too much. Cause I feel like, yeah, you probably wouldn't be as good at what you do, you know, like you'd probably get pretty drained pretty quickly if you're a hospice nurse and you're just like picking up others' energy and like letting it sit in your body and being like, why am I so anxious? Why am I so like on edge? Like that wouldn't be like, that probably wouldn't be the person who's meant to be a hospice nurse.
It's definitely a skill. I mean, I think I had the skill of like, oh, I can, there's chaos around me and I can be kind of still in the center and go, all right, what do we need to do? Mm-hmm. But it's like, yeah, it's definitely like when you're in there with the family, like you know, I feel the emotions and I do get emotional with people and like support them, but sure, it is like, it's not like I'm breaking down and, you know, coming apart for that, you know, because it's like I'm holding the space so that they can feel whatever they're feeling. And so it's just like being the center is like super important. I mean, as a nurse, but like anybody working with dying, it's super important to, you know, stay chill in the middle of it.
How do you deal with like energetic hygiene?
The day to day is like kind of making sure not to like hold on to it and let it flow through. I do a lot of like breathing exercises to get it out. Then like my ritual work also helps clear things out, and like the beings I work with will block a lot of things. And then I do a ritual bath every week at least, which is like you consecrate the salt and you consecrate the water and you bless it and you exorcise all demons, parasites, thought forms, golems, ghosts, spiritual dirt and evil influence, and cast it into the outer darkness. And that's been huge for me because my first hospice job, I didn't know about spiritual hygiene. And I did, like, I was just like drowning in muck and like anxiety and grief and just like, I was so burnt out. And figuring out like, oh, okay, yeah, I can't take it all on. Gotta scoop myself out of the mud.
Yeah, or I think I'm not gonna be able to function. If you, because like I was a social worker for a long time. I worked with kids, and like I was not raised religious. I didn't really have any specific kind of spiritual practice, or I was curious about like esoteric stuff. Like I think that's when I started like toying around with like tarot and certain kinds of things like that, but I didn't really have definitely didn't know about spiritual hygiene, definitely didn't know that like I needed to clear my energy and cleanse my myself of all of the, as you can imagine, like really difficult things that I was dealing with every day. And I got super burnt out, and I probably, like, honestly would probably never go back to doing that. I was good at it, but like, I couldn't handle like continuing to do that work and be as sensitive as I am. But then, like, you know, after leaving and having some space from that, I did dive more into spirituality, and I hadn't really thought about it like that exactly. Like, I just didn't know how to handle that kind of intensity, and I didn't have anything spiritual really to lean on at that time. That's a good point. Cause like now I do, but I don't work in a situation like, I haven't done anything that serious or heavy since then. So, and I'm like, yeah, I wonder how different it would have been if I had, if I did a ritual bath and meditated or any of those things, like, goodness. Okay, I have a question. Because you said, you know, you'll sit with families and you'll do mantras and you'll call in, you know, Shiva and that sort of thing. Like, are you doing that, like, openly out loud with families? Like, I guess I just wonder, like, do people want this? Or is this something you just kind of do privately on your, like, within your, within your own?
Yeah, it's all... in my mind while I'm sitting there with them. So, which is also another skill I've had to develop of like doing two things at one time. Cause it's like, you're going in, you're taking vital signs, you're,
right,
you know, telling the family what to do. You're doing all these things. And then in my mind, I'm like, you know, I open the gate of the East. I open the gate of the South. I open the gate, you know,
yes. Okay.
Calling in these things. I'm doing mantras. I'm visualizing things happening. So it's like just doing everything I can to like hold this space for both. You know, it's like, I'm a professional. I have you. We're okay. This is what it is. And then also like helping their spirit move through the process at the same time. But then sometimes I've done like, you know, like done the visit and then like gone to my car. I've done this several times of like, okay, they're going to die today. Or today or tomorrow, I've got to do this like right now. And I sit in my car and I go into vision and walk the person through the process.
Wow.
Sitting in my car by the side of the road.
Sure. No, I think that's kind of great that you're able to like still do your job, you know, and be present. As like, yeah, like you said, you're having to do like nurse business at the same time where you're having to also like, you know, in your mind sort of you're sort of able to be in two places at once in a way. And I imagine that is a skill you have to develop. But I guess whenever you said that, and this is one of the questions I had before you came on, was I was like, how do you approach this with people? Like, I don't know where you live, but I feel like if I started like chanting a mantra to anybody around here, like they would look at me like I was fucking nuts, and they'd be like, get this devil worshiper out of the room. but like, I do think it would be really interesting I would be really impressed if that would, if you were like going up to people and being like, look, I can walk him through the process, like it's gonna, you know, if you're open to it like that. But I imagine like it's probably,
yeah,
not even the time for all that. Like, it's probably better that you do it privately.
Yeah,
it's probably like more effective and direct, you know. You're able to just hold the space for that and not have to worry about like what other people are thinking, or are they, you know, holding this up somehow, or, you know, I think if you brought other people into it, it probably would cause some, I don't know, confusion or something.
Yeah. And I think if I was like an official quote death doula, I could probably come in and be like, we're gonna get weird, let's, here's what we need, 5 candles, let's set it up, you know, and do the whole thing. But I'm in Portland, Oregon, so I probably could with more people be like, here's what's gonna happen, I'm gonna, you know, whatever, and get a little weirder. But it's still like, most of where I work is not in Portland, and it's, you know, like the suburbs of, around Portland are not as like woo woo cuckoo crazy as Portland is. So it's still a lot of like born again Christians if they're religious, and then like a lot of like people aren't religious at all. So it's kind of, it's still just kind of like, we'll do whatever we can. But, you know, like I had the one I was talking about where I saw Lord Shiva, I had the thought when, because this guy had been like fighting and fighting and like tense like this whole time. And I was like, he's like working through his trauma. He has to move it out of his body before he can die. And I told them that, I was like, I told them, I'm like, I've heard people talk about this, like that trauma stored in the body. And he's like, he had to move it out. He had to like relive this stuff with his dad and all these things. And the, his sister later was like, you know what? My Qigong teacher told me about The Body Keeps the Score. You should read that book. I was like, that's the book I was thinking of.
Funny. That's cool. That's a cool connection that you like, yeah, that's interesting. And that makes so much sense though, right? Like, I mean, I guess it is more like of a like accepted sort of concept that, yeah, the body, that the body holds onto trauma, it can manifest physically. Yeah, like those kinds of things are I guess more common. But I don't know, that's still like such a funny connection that she like knew the same exact
I want to, well, we were talking, I think we were talking about this before, me and Jonathan, that like the same idea of like with mediumship, right? If you're like connecting to the spiritual realm, like you want to be in a higher frequency. So what happens is those heavier, denser emotions that, or like old trauma that's sitting in you has to come up. So do you think like that correlates to like the death transition, like in order for you to like open this portal to go into the afterlife, you have to like release these denser energies within you?
I think so. Because not everybody has it. Not everybody has that like difficult of an experience, but like when it's difficult, it's really, really hard. There is like part of it is like there, that you just have to move it all through. And then sometimes it's just like your body, it's not to the end of the tape yet. You have this much tape in the player and you're not there, and you just have to wait it out. And sometimes those people seem to have like an easier time because they must have, you know, already done that work, or like they didn't have those, like they weren't in that same dense, heavy, you know, traumatic kind of state. But yeah, because it is like, and it could be something like yeah, like you said, like opening up into that realm like takes more power, and like the denseness is in the way of like opening it up or something like that.
I mean, sure. I've been, you're a hospice nurse, but I've been around death a couple times, and like whenever I've been in the room where somebody died, I always felt like the energy kind of raise up and it feels like hot in there to me. But I always associate like hot, like if you think of terms of atoms, like the frequency is moving faster. That's why something's hot. So like when death happens, like does the energy like speed up in order to match the frequency of like the spiritual realm, so then you can transition, you know? So I always thought like maybe that's why, like you said, the people have these traumas come up.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like, when any kind of like biological material decomposes, it does heat up. Like, you know, if you have like fertilizer and things like that, like it can like spontaneously catch fire if the sun's like shining directly on it, because it's already like decomposing and that produces heat. So I feel like that actually makes a lot of sense. Like, just like scientifically or whatever, if that's what happens with like, you know, decomposing leaves or something, like that as they're decomposing they create heat, like it also kind of makes sense that as you're as a person is dying, the particles speed up or break down in a way that produces some kind of, maybe not literal heat, but just something that you can sense if you're like Pete and tapped into that.
You guys are all tapped in. Come on.
Well, I just, Pete, you get such like specific kind of like, I don't know, like you're able to really pick up on exactly what it is that you're sensing and name it. And whereas like, I feel like,
I just ask. Yeah. I'm just
maybe that's true. Maybe
I'm just maybe I'm more curious.
I don't know. I think you have a certain amount of clarity about, you know, you're like if you feel, you know, a certain tingle in your body somewhere, that indicates a very specific, like
maybe
that's connected
maybe
to
I'm
a
more
specific,
controlling.
Like, I don't know. I think that's very interesting about your practice, and I think that's hard for me and probably for a lot of people to figure out what the sensations, just to even be aware of the sensations and then be able to connect them to whatever it is that they symbolize.
So can we ask, like, what's the weirdest thing you ever experienced? Any aliens ever come out of a human body?
No, I've never had that experience. There's a couple that come to mind. One patient was, she was like in her late 30s. And dying of like end stage alcoholism, like end stage liver failure, at like 38 or whatever. So like a real different kind of vibe than like, oh, it's an 80-year-old with cancer or whatever. So, you know, she wasn't on with us very long. I mean, it was like a few weeks, pretty quick. Thing, but I did the death vision for her and kind of like went into her room and I was looking at her body and it was like, there's no one there. And I was like, so I asked, I was like, where is she at? I mean, her body's still alive. So where is she? And in the corner, there was like a teenage girl, like a young teenage girl. And that was her. And it was like, it felt like at the point, you know, like maybe that was when she started drinking, you know, and like there was like a split and it's like something else took her body over for the rest of her life. And I took her through the process, through the to the river, across the bridge, to the scales, the whole thing. And as we crossed the plains and like her form started falling away from this little girl, it was like the little girl form fell away, and then she was this like giant, like being of light, like huge, like towering tall. And then we went, and I took her through, and I didn't get a lot of like specific insight about that, but it was just so interesting of like, oh, she wasn't, she was still like in charge of her body, but like it wasn't in control of it at, in the same way. But it was like she was still this like bright soul, even though people might look at her and like, oh, she wasted her life, she drank her life away, and died so young. So that was pretty interesting. I had this other guy, and he was like a Vietnam vet, and I don't know if y'all know Vietnam vets. I've worked with
my grandfather. I mean, he's passed now, but I think he certainly came back with a lot of PTSD and alcoholism, like just
hard,
really hard stuff.
This guy, like, he wasn't like an active alcoholic, but he had like long history of schizophrenia, and one of the doctors was like, probably was an alcoholic in the past, because that like ties in a lot of times. And he had, this guy had cancer, like rectal cancer, like all through. And so he had diarrhea just like all the time, like horrible, like, you know, just a terrible existence. But because he's like seeing things, he's like putting on, like, there's bugs in me, and that's what's making, causing this. And he'd like sit and like try and, he'd like have a piece of lint and like see all the bugs that's in that, there's in there. And I try to tell him over and over again, like, you do have something in you that's causing this. It's not the bugs. We're not going to look at the bugs. There's no bugs. But he couldn't like accept that it was happening to him. So when he finally like was actively dying, I did the death vision for him. And he was another one. It was like he almost wasn't there. He almost like wasn't in his body. And I took him into the desert. And like the second we stepped into the desert, he like sunk into the sand and was like held there in the sand, and he couldn't go further. And, but he was relieved. It was like there was something had been like using his body for all that time. And it like needed to be released, or that needed to be held until it could, I don't know. I don't fully understand it, but like he was just like bound immediately. And not that he was a bad person or that he thing, but it was like he just needed to be held there until he could move on.
I thought you were going to say you did the death vision and there was a giant bug inside of him.
I mean, in a way, like, I mean, in a way, it does sound like there was something in there.
Yeah. Unfortunately for him, I still couldn't find the bugs, even in his soul.
Yeah.
Well, like, even talking about like the energy of everything, like, to me, like, the desert seems like maybe it's a place where like they process things, you know, like it could be that they are denser on like some energetic form, and maybe they have to like kind of sit there to kind of like let things process through them. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, it did feel like it was just like his life was so, there was so much, and because of his mental state, he couldn't process it, and then like also he wasn't fully in control of himself either, yeah. And like that needed to be until he could like separate what was him and what was this other entity or something.
Yeah,
I don't
know.
But
do you ever feel like they come to you beforehand? Like, have you ever had the experience? Because I've had experiences where like people have come to me in their energetic form and then passed. You know, like showed up beforehand, or like even when I've done like clearing at like homes and stuff, like things have come to me before I get there. So I was just curious if like you've ever had the experience where like people come, you know, maybe beforehand.
Not really. Although I do, I've noticed I get like woken up a lot at night. Yeah. If I don't like consciously like kind of protect my room, there'll be lots of like, I'm half awake, half asleep. Like, and I felt like that's spirits coming to me. And there was one that came to be helped to pass once, where I got the very clear thing, but most of the time I don't get a sense of who it is or what they want. It's just, so it could be some other kind of thing. I had one patient, he was younger, I mean, in his 50s. And I was doing, I kept like feeling like I need to go to him when I was meditating and stuff. And so I'd go and talk to him, and I did the death vision and whatever. And I came in one day and he's like, you know what? You remind me of Bruce Willis in that movie where he doesn't know he's dead, but he's always around. That's what you feel like. You feel like you're always around me, even though when you're not here.
That's funny. That's kind of amazing. I love that. I love when people can like pick up on the sort of like, yeah. Like he probably didn't know why that was, but I love that he was able to pick up on that.
Yeah.
The fact that, yeah, you guys are kind of hanging out in the astral somewhere.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he was the only one that like I think was still aware enough that could like pick up on it, because a lot of people are, you know, by the time they're close, they're unconscious or like whatever, so they can't like tell me about anything that's happening. So that one was really interesting.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, I guess that makes sense too. That most people are you know, not conscious enough. Like, or aware enough to be able to connect like that. But I don't know. That's interesting. I was going to ask something about, because like you talked earlier, and you used a term for it. Now I can't remember what it was, but like just, you know, people who are like really agitated and anxious, like as, you know, I guess shortly before they die. I'm not sure what you called it.
Oh, but terminal agitation.
Terminal agitation. Okay, that I knew like agitation was in there somewhere. How does that look, and like what do you sort of do, both as a nurse and as a spiritual practitioner, to kind of like deal with that? Because I mean, I've obviously like heard of that kind of I've never really watched anyone die or been present for that, but I've definitely heard stories about like other family members and just how like they're trying to like leave and like go home, and they like, you know, they're trying to like unconnect themselves from all the, you know, IVs or whatever. And I mean, like this happened to my grandfather, and he actually did leave the hospital, and I don't know, it was awful and scary, and he was very resistant. No, he was totally in denial about the fact that he was dying. And I mean, I think that that's part of the process, sure, for people, but like, I don't know that there was anything anyone could have done to sort of alleviate that or calm him down or assure him that it was okay and it was part of the process. Like, he was a very strong-willed Capricorn person.
And, oh, Capricorn. Oh, no.
I love Capricorns, but yeah, definitely like not a man that you could tell, like, he was going to do whatever he wanted to do and wouldn't listen to nobody at all. Yeah. So I guess I don't know that, like, for him, I don't think there was probably anything different that, you know, the hospital staff could have done or anything like that. Like, I think it was probably just like, that was his process. That was what was, you know, that's how it was going to go down. That's fine. But yeah, like, what do you do when people are experiencing that?
Yeah. Well, like you said, like, want to go home. I gotta go. That's like really common. And sometimes it's like real mild and brief of like, I gotta get out of the bed. I gotta go. And they try to get out of the bed, but they can't walk and things like that. And then you're afraid they're falling and all of that. And then it can be depending on, you know, we had this guy and he was like, up until like 2 weeks before he went on hospice, he was like completely independent, doing all his own tasks. He was healthy, like eating good food. He had been like a runner. He had like was in the military. He was like, you know, and like 70 years old. So like not that old. And then the cancer took over and then he was like bedbound and falling and like couldn't get up. And then was like, we had him on extreme amounts of antipsychotics and to like keep it managed. And that's like, that's where you go with it, is like you do as much of like antipsychotic meds like haloperidol to keep it so they can like stay calm and stay in bed essentially. It can be really, really hard, and people, like a lot of people, like have never seen it and they're like, oh my god, I had no idea that this was a possibility. And spiritually, you know, I haven't had a lot of like success with, you know, getting somebody to like calm down with that. Cause I think it is like when it's real extreme, it is like there's something they have to move through their body. And like when they're perfectly still in the bed, it's not happening. And so then they get real agitated. Also, another theory I have, talking about like higher level energies, is like angelic beings start coming around the closer you get to like disconnect you and like make the portal and like make those transition points. And angels are very, like, very high level energy. Like, and so it, like, you know, can make people agitated. That's another theory I have.
That kind of makes sense. It's sort of like what we were saying earlier about, I think what Pete was saying about, you know, when you start to raise your vibration or sort of ascend, as people say, like it can bring up a lot of like anxiety or stress. And it's like that trauma stuff, those heavier, denser energies also come up as you raise your vibration. So I sort of seems like, yeah, like that theory checks out, as at least in terms of energetics. I don't know. I mean, I think it's interesting, like, that, I mean, I understand, like, as, you know, you have to keep people safe and keep them as like relaxed as possible. And I think, like, before this, I probably wondered about, you know, whether, like, medications, especially, like, antipsychotics would somehow dull someone's senses and or you know, change their experience, but now that like we've been talking for a while, I guess it sort of seems like this is something that's like your spirit is transitioning, right? Your body is sort of like, not that it doesn't matter, but they're going to be leaving it anyway. And I you know what I mean? Like, I think I was kind of like, I wonder if if like antipsychotics would somehow like change their experience or hinder their transition or something. But no, it seems like probably they're sort of separate things. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's like the spirit is energized, and then it's like, you know, like talking about like, you know, like it gets hot, it gets, you know, more energy. It's like the balloon is trying to bounce around, you know, like, and but the body is like so dense, and it can't, you can't like move it around as much as you need it to. And it's like, from the medical standpoint, we're just thinking like, you know, they might already be having pain that we're treating. And if they do get up and have a fall and break something, or like, you know, or bleeding, like, then it's like, then it's just compounding like how hard we have to work to keep the pain under control. And so it's like the safety gets to be important.
I imagine that is like the priority, for sure. And yeah, I guess I'm kind of seeing how what's happening energetically or spiritually is, yeah, it's sort of, I don't know, just sort of like you need to keep the body like calm and safe as this happens. Like that makes more sense to me now that we've been talking for a while. But I don't know. Is there anything else, Pete, that you have? Like, we're here at hour and a half.
Yeah, I just want to. This is probably not a quick question, but
no, it's okay.
Had any experiences where the spirit leaves the body but doesn't necessarily transition, or an awareness of like anybody kind of getting attached from wanting to still be here? Or like, you know, some people call them like shades, like their spirit is still here, but they're not necessarily transitioned.
I haven't picked up on that specifically. No. I've definitely heard about it happening with other spiritual, like people that work with the dying and, you know, kind of work in death, but,
well, I mean, you're kind of like clearing the way. So I feel like my thought was they're probably not going to really get stuck with you because you're inviting all these deities and like opening the space for them to kind of smoothly transition. But I was just curious if you've ever had that experience.
I actually just remembered that I did one death vision, and this guy, like the second I got into the desert, he was like running around like a crazy person. And just like this way and that, just like running around. Then I'm like, we got to go this way, come over here. And like, we got to the bridge, and then he like jumped on my back, and I was like, oh no, absolutely not. And I just like, I, like, you're not,
that's you, not you're, what this is.
No, you're not coming back with me. And so I asked this angelic being I work with, I'm like, okay, you got to take me home and you got to leave him here. Like, we're not doing this. And so I just like went back through them. And that guy ended up living for like 3 more months. We thought he was like close to dying, and then he lived for like a really long time. So he was apparently very keen on staying. But I don't think I did another one for him. At least I don't remember it I did. So, but his wife was very like, could not, was just like inconsolable, like could not let go of him. And like the family is just like standing around like, okay, we've been doing this, we've been crying at the bedside for like 2 hours, like I don't, we got to cut it off at some point here.
Yeah.
It's not doing her any good, it's not doing anybody any good to,
yeah, I mean, I think going. That's something that definitely happens with people, like if their family, you know, their loved ones aren't ready to let them go, they somehow hang on, or they'll hang on to like a specific event or holiday or something, and then like die shortly after. You know, either they want to, you know, they want to stick around for somebody's wedding or the last Christmas or whatever, or yeah, they have someone who they're afraid to leave because they haven't let go, and when they finally do, like that's when they end up passing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's really sweet. But then I guess I always wonder about the people who don't have, like, maybe they don't have a family or they're disconnected from them for whatever reason. Like, is that something you see in the work that you do? Like, people who are just kind of alone?
Yeah, I definitely have. Most of the people I've worked with have somebody.
Good. That's obviously like,
yeah.
I don't know. Everyone's kind of afraid of dying alone, like, even though it is something you do.
Jonathan, don't feed into Ruby's fear of death alone. All right.
What do you mean? Everyone die. Every living thing dies alone.
That's yeah, not that, true.
I don't know. I'm not sure if I believe that. I think it on. I think to, on some level, yes.
You have to walk through alone. You have to mm-hmm. walk away from your body alone.
Yeah, but you're not alone, a lot because you're everything.
True facts.
Whatever.
But
sorry,
it does happen a lot that people wait till somebody leaves the room or like, oh, I went home to get some rest and then they died. I wanted to be there. I wanted to hold their hand. And then they're like, no, I mm-hmm. wanted to. But I think that is like a lot of times the attachment of the loved one is what's, you know, it's too much for them. Like they can't fully let go while yeah. they're sitting there feeling that. And so they leave the room and then they let go and say goodbye.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I mean, I think it's like, I don't know. I can imagine, like, if they're right there, you know, if your daughter is right there in front of you, like, you're, of course you don't, it's harder to, like, willingly just be like, okay, peace out. Like, I'm sure it's a lot less heavy when you're just like, okay, like, I know this is happening. They know it's probably best that, like, I probably am not strong enough or whatever. Like, you're not maybe conscious of these things, of course, but yeah, that makes sense to me. That's sad though.
Perfect. Perfect place to end our podcast on dying alone.
Dying alone.
I'm sorry. I just had to ask about it.
I'm sorry. I'm just teasing.
It's true. We do have to do it on our own. And that's like, I think that's the like scary part of it is because it's like, you know, I mean, yeah, that's the sort of like fear we all have. So of course we have to talk about it a little bit, but it's actually, you know, what Jonathan said was like, you know, it's not, yeah, it sounds like most people do have somebody and you're really only alone in that. And I mean, yeah, you're, if someone's helping to like, walk you through that journey before you have to go through it, you don't feel as alone, which is like, I mean, I imagine that's part of why you do what you do, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And even if I'm not the one, it's like there are a lot of beings working in the land of the dead. Like there are all sorts of angelic beings waiting to greet you and to help you. You know, like I work with them and I do the work and whatever, but like, you know, it's not like you're left absolutely, you know, like you can't, like you have nothing and then no one's there to be there for you. You'll be taken care of. It's not as scary as like people think it is on the other side of it. Thinking about it without like knowing and, you know, like, you don't, but like, if you go in vision and you go there, it's not that bad. You'll be okay.
Death. It's not that bad.
It's not that bad. I mean, that's that should be the title of our episode.
Sure, yeah, of course.
Death.
Yeah, that's what.
Not
that's,
that bad.
It's not that bad. All
right. Is
Thank
there
you
anything?
So much for being here. This was great.
Yeah, we are appreciate you, it, and we appreciate the work you do. You know, helping people not be alone when they die.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Is there anything you want us to plug? We could do rainbow_goth_guy on Instagram is your social media.
That's a great handle.
Thank you. Because I'm working in death and it gets dark. I'm gothy, but also I want it to be joyful. You should have wonderful, amazing ecstatic experiences along the way. Like it should be rainbows and wonderful. So that's Rainbow Goth Guy. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, if any. Yeah, that's the best place. If anybody wants to message me, you know, I can happy to talk out whatever. If you want me to like work with you on for your loved one or whatever, like you know. I don't have like any kind of formal process for any of this, but so just message me if you want to chat. I'd love to talk to you about whatever's going on. So.
Awesome. Thanks again. You can find us at Spiritual Graffiti Pod on Instagram, Blue Collar Spiritualist on Instagram and TikTok, Ruby Marvel on Instagram and Ruby Marvel X on TikTok. Please like, share, follow, whatever you want to do to help us grow. And we'll see you next week.
Yep.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.